the kids, when they came off the game, out of the game, they were buzzing about it. They, oh, this is so cool, this is awesome. Oh, I didn't realise that, you know, all this kind of stuff was taken into account. So, to me, that's valuable learning.
You're listening to the NZ PE Teacher Cast, a podcast sharing some of the inspirational stories from amazing health and physical education teachers. Today's episode is sponsored by My Study Series, an online learning platform by New Zealand PE teachers for New Zealand PE teachers and their students. Check it out now at mystudyseries.co.nz.
Kia ora everyone, we're here with Andrew O'Neill from Middleton Grange School. It's been a fairly hectic week in Wellington and across the upper South Island with the earthquake. So it's been made for an interesting couple of days. Been a lot of evacuations around Wellington, but we've been getting by. We're just down at Gasworks in Wellington. If you know Gasworks, it's a nice little pub and restaurant. We've just finished up at Penn's Inspired Leadership Program, which has been a nice little two-day program where we've been looking at a few leadership things and hearing from some great presenters. So it's been quite good with that. So, Andrew, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Before we get started, can you just tell us a little bit about your teaching background and experience and a few tidbits about your school and the students you teach? Middleton
sure.
Grange School, right?
Yep. Middleton Grange. Yep.
I'd never heard of it until I'd emailed you. So,
sure.
No, we met at Penn's.
Yep. That's right. That's where it all started with the scholarship stuff.
Mm, mm.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm Andrew. I'm just finishing off my 24th year of teaching. haven't been teaching all my life either. I went through the BEd PE program. I was one of the first year intake of the whole program.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. Kind of like forging the way there, and really wanted a job in Christchurch, but that didn't happen. So I ended up getting a job in Invercargill, of all places. So went down there and with my wife and two kids, thinking I'll get my registration in 2 years and then get back to Christchurch. But 12 years later and two extra kids, we finally got here. Yeah. So in my 24 years of teaching, I've been involved in volleyball pretty much all the way through. I think the highlights for me in that time have been when I was at Hargest and our senior boys team won the Div 2 Nationals. That was a pretty big achievement for a team from Invercargill. In Christchurch, I did a bit of volleyball. I've done volleyball there too, and I think the best achievement that I've really enjoyed is to see the boys in 2010 win the South Islands.
Nice.
So, yeah, that's pretty cool. So, although I've been involved in volleyball that long, squash is actually my passion. It's what I really enjoy. So I quite enjoy the fact that I'm involved in that capacity, but also I can get out of the school environment and do something for myself, that kind of stuff.
Tried playing squash once.
Yeah.
Once.
And?
My glutes. Gone.
Yeah.
Gone. Couldn't walk the next day.
Do it again and they'll come right. Yeah. So yeah, then I got the curriculum leader's position at Middleton, so I've been there for 12 years. Middleton's a state integrated school, and it's from new entrant right through to year 13. It's about 1,300 people there, and it's the way it's organised. It's got primary school, it's got a middle school year 7 to 10, a senior college year 11 through to 13, and an international college as well. So yeah, it's fairly complex, but it's a lot of fun and a bit of a challenge in some ways to actually get the program running. The makeup of the school is about 65% European, 17% Asian, and 10% Māori Pacifica. Yeah.
What's the size of the senior school? So, not the senior school, but the secondary component of the school.
Yes.
What's the numbers there?
So we're just about 550.
Okay.
And in that, we've got, as far as next year's concerned, we've got 11, year 11, we've got three PE classes coming in. We've got two at year 12 and two at year 13. Yeah.
That's pretty good. Mm. It's very similar to where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
So we're here at the Inspired Leadership Program for PENS.
Yep.
2 days, it's been pretty good, minus the one afternoon session. It was okay, we could take some stuff from that. But what's been the best takeaway for you so far, or across the 2 days?
There've actually been quite a lot of takeaways, and to me it's a real challenge to now go back and actually just think about how we're going to integrate a whole lot of stuff. To me, I've come up with kind of like two ideas. I wanted to see pretty much how we can incorporate within our program integration across the different curriculum areas and how we can link that all together, knowing that there will be challenges, but I'm up to that. I'm quite okay, and we'll just take it bit by bit. So Shay's chatting about all the integration of stuff, and I think, like, for me, the biggest thing was to really hear about where is the 21st century going for students going out into the workplace, and so how are we going to prepare them, and just the whole idea of the key competencies kind of things working through our program as being that's what employers are actually wanting in their future employees. So, you know, designing our course around that kind of stuff.
Helen Tuhoro said it, she said it really nicely around how they haven't thrown out the curriculum, but that has become less of a focus for them, and they're more about those key competencies, because they are what employers want.
Yeah.
They are what we should be striving our kids to be able to demonstrate off the back of their hand without even thinking
about
it, because there's some good stuff in there. So I think for me, I really, I'd done a little bit of research around Tarawera High School, because we've had Kelly Ross on the podcast, and hearing Helen and getting to hear her in person was, for me,
it was awesome, mate. You could just sense the passion and the enthusiasm, and what came through to me was very much a real heart for actually moving the students through, but in a sense for the students themselves to know that they are really important, and the whole person, whole order, was coming through quite clearly, which was quite cool.
And she had again, people crying.
Yeah, it's
people
pretty crying. Awesome, mate. It's,
that's going to be my new goal. Next time I present this, I want to make someone cry. But
for the right reasons, of course.
I think a good couple of days, and definitely.
Totally.
Next year, however it pans out, encourage people to get along to that if you're thinking about middle leadership or being a leader, because it's
totally.
Just even the networking is really good.
Yeah.
I put a lot of faces to names over the last 2 days, which was cool. So I'm stoked with that.
Mm.
So we're really here to talk about this unique approach that you've got in your Level 1 course.
Trying.
No, yeah. Sounds like you're doing more than trying to me. But you've got this quite cool sport ed type model. Around, was it 1.4 you're doing?
Yep.
Tell us all about that, and I've got a few questions.
Sure, yeah. So when we started up, we kind of like worked it through with the students that we'd look at some different options. And so while the criteria shows quite a few different influences and themes that you can look at, we wanted to kind of like narrow it back a little bit, because what we are trying to do within our program is get that socio-cultural perspectives going right through and scaffolding. So we don't want to, at level one, throw heaps at them. So kind of like, let's just narrow the focus down so they get a real grasp behind what they're actually looking at. So some sports were selected that gave a variety. So we looked at modified lacrosse. We looked at Zumba, and we got a guy in who runs a skateboarding, rollerblading job, and so the kids got out there and trialled a whole lot of that kind of stuff. And then the final part we did was a Ripper Rugby franchise tournament. Yeah.
So a franchise tournament.
Yep.
So you're looking at having owners and stuff like that.
Yeah.
How did that pan out?
Yeah. So so our focus was on the media and as an influence, and the theme was kind of like sponsorship and commodification within how the media and sport are operating. So this was kind of like a bit of a, it wasn't a last minute adaptation to the program, but it was something we'd thought at, but kind of like in a couple of weeks leading into the program, we said, well, let's try this, let's give it a go. let's not worry too much about getting it right at the start, but give the kids a real sense of, well, actually, this is a little bit more of the realism behind what's actually happening out there in society for them. So the way we set it up was we got four teams, and so we is and the other teacher, Andrew Gort, what we did was we set it up so that we had a group of students who were what we considered the better players, the better sportsmen and women in the group, to actually be put into a pool that became the draft players. So we set teams up. We had CEO in each team, we had two managers, and we had a captain, and then so they were set, so we set them up. So the key idea was when we were putting these teams together, we made sure that they were even. So we wanted balance so that when they came together, there was real competition going on. So we did that, so we set it out.
So you already had some part of the team was formed, then you guys
We set that form, yeah, because, you know, if you left it to them, there would be a lot of imbalance and, you know, we suck as a team and that kind of stuff.
And actually a good tip, because we've done something similar, but we went from scratch. They could pick, but the only way to do it to get competitive teams was I had to group the students in each round, then all of a sudden the good kids know they're in the good kid group, and the crap kids know they're in the crap kids group, and I had to do a bit of prior warning around that, but it's still a kid, this group with the crap kids, it's not a good message to send, so I like the way that you've done it.
Yeah, so we did that, and we got them into the classroom, and we showed them the teams, and then we showed them what the draft players were. And who they were, and of course, you know, the old ripple effect of ooh, that kind of stuff. So it was quite cool. And so what we said then is, right, there's going to be a silent auction of three rounds, but it's the CEOs and the managers only that could be in the silent auction. So So we flicked the others and said, all right, come prepared for some physical activity. We banged them into the gym so they could be active there doing that. And then what we did is we showed the CEOs and the managers who the pool of players were that they could bring into the team. So having done that and giving them time, they could discuss and see, you know, who were the ones that they wanted in their teams and that kind of stuff. And then,
so was it like a combine that they could see these guys in action?
No. It was kind of like so we'll talk about that later on, how it went, but this was kind of like first up, right at the beginning, they were just going to pull these players in based on how they thought, how good they were, kind of stuff there. So the silent auction worked. They loved it, the kids loved it, and they spent a bit more. So we gave them all $12 million at the start.
$12 million,
right? So they had $12 million to start with. And even the CEO and the two managers, the captain, there were set costs for them, so that came out of the $12 million.
Yep.
Cool. All right, and then from what was left, they had to buy these players in. But they also had to think down the track that, okay, there's going to be a round robin, and after the round robin, there's going to be another draft transfer window. So they had their teams that they played around full round robin in, and then they had the opportunity of going back in and saying, oh, well, actually, we want to buy this player in instead of. So those,
did they need to leave some money?
Yes. We'll talk a little bit more about that too. But as the first round robin went, what happened was it gave them the opportunity to actually see how their players operated, or when they came up against the opposition, they knew who the draft players were in the other team, so they could watch them as well and actually see how they operated. So in that first round, the way we set it up, so we I put a spreadsheet together that basically all the CEOs had to do was to put the value of the money in. So for the players that bought, bang, they just put it in the cells and away they went. But for each game, what we did, and it's not perfect yet, but what we did was so teams were allocated home or away games, and so there would be expenses for a home game versus an away game. All right, so that was all set up, you know, for different things. And if you were a home game, for example, you had to supply, theoretically, two refs. If you were an away game, you supplied the third ref, which is the video ref kind of thing. So we just kind of, like, mocked it up like that.
And they had, there was costs associated with that.
And there were costs associated they had to cover, and there were uniform costs and stuff like that.
So that's really cool. That's what I'm hearing is that's quite unique. Like, Sport Ed has been quite popular in the two schools that I've taught in, but not to the level like we might have. Okay, yeah, you're the away team, you've got to provide the refs, but there's never been that monetary
value put to
value attached. And but that's what you're trying to teach around the sponsorship and the media and what these teams have to experience.
So even though there was those kind of costs, they actually played the game without refs, so everybody was involved. So it was just that theoretical thing. They had uniform costs, they had other costs. For example, if you had a home game, well, you had an entertainment cost that you had to play. So if you had a home game, you invariably had more costs. But what we did to mix that up was that they weren't set costs for each home game or away game. So we set up cards that had different costs, and the CEOs would come in and draw out of the hat a different card. So for one home game, they might have had to pay more in entertainment than in another one, kind of thing. So like that. So the costs were varying all the time, just to do that kind of thing. Then we also had play game cards, and so that was another card that came out, and it could have been things like your best player's injured, and so they're off for 2 minutes or whatever like that, or foul weather comes through, your costs that you're going to get for putting it on has diminished heaps, or your spectators haven't come as a result of that. So there were all those kind of costs, and so you know, you had good ones or bad ones. So that was just what had to go in. It was a bit of, you know, the luck of the draw that became part of the cost, positive or negative, for that round. Yeah. So and again, if they won, I think they got about $1 million. If they lost, if they drew, $500,000, and if they lost, they got nothing. So you know, that competitive edge was still there. It was that whole idea of, well, within a franchise, we want to win, kind of stuff. Yeah,
it's got some really close links to not gamification, but there's a lot of video games around sports team management, and they've got to manage ticket sales, and they earn from that, and they've got to think, well, ticket sales are poor, I need to put more vendors in to provide good food and alcohol, and managing budgets and player budgets, and are your players happy, and stuff like that. So how did you, with these cards, if they were draw out, or some of those other things, how did you tie them back in terms of linking to the requirements of the standard, or the understanding around that sponsorship and the media and the impact on that? How did that link back to the theory?
So we had done some theory beforehand to give them an idea as to how the whole impact on media and franchising of teams occurred. So they had that all understood before the actual game time. So when they came into it, they could actually relate, make real that kind of stuff. Yeah, as far as linking it back to the criteria, that's an area we want to work on. We haven't got it totally sorted yet. As far as gathering data for evidence and things, at the moment, what we did, because it was a last minute thing, we didn't get that tied up properly. But we've already been talking a little bit about what we want to do for next year.
But that's right. You don't want to. I hate teaching to the assessment.
What I found, and what I'm thinking of, is the kids, when they came off the game, out of the game, they were buzzing about it. They, oh, this is so cool, this is awesome. Oh, I didn't realise that all this kind of stuff was taken into account. So, to me, that's valuable learning. And, I mean, in reflections, what do we do? Do we say, right, let's actually just have some of the evidence when we're talking about self and others? Do we actually say, right, okay, so in your team, how did your team operate? What was the feelings like within the team? How did that affect you and influence others? And what were the others like in your team as a result of maybe, well, actually, we went pretty well. Oh, no, we didn't. We didn't go really well. So, you know, you get all that variation there.
But so I think when you've got an experience like that where they do come away buzzing and they're like, man, this has been a really cool process or experience, and it might not have been tailored exactly for the standard or taught to the standard, that's fine because the experience has been so authentic and meaningful to them, they're going to be able to pull apart that experience and find the answers they need in their reflections and
Absolutely.
Stuff like that. So
yeah.
I think that's really cool. You mentioned that you, so this is, it was kind of rushed maybe.
Yeah.
First time trying it. What are you going to change next time?
Yeah, so one of the things that I've been thinking about just in the last week or so, actually, is it would be pretty cool, and we're fortunate because we're in Christchurch, it would be really cool to get somebody from the Crusaders outfit who are involved in the franchise within that aspect of promoting and the sponsorship side of things, to actually come in and talk a little bit to the guys beforehand, like as part of getting that understanding of what it's all like, to get them to come in and just throw their slant on, well, this is how we operate and why. And then for them to be able to take some of that stuff away and, yeah.
How, do you have a good rugby team at Middleton?
Pass. Yeah. Why, would you like to have come and
us? No, I'm just saying, like, if you've got a good team, then that'll be easy.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm sure they'll be more than willing to come on by and, most people want to give back to the community, and I think that will just add another level of authenticity when the kids can hear, you know, some of the challenges or some of the cool things that the franchise deals with.
Yeah,
it sounds really cool. How has the performance? How did they perform in terms of stats against the national average for 1.4? Can you recall?
Yeah, they're ticking along not too bad. This year we're slightly lower than normal, than our normal, which is normally... Oh, sorry, I did forget to mention Middleton's a decile 9 school.
Mm-hmm.
So comparing against decile 9 rates and things like that, we're normally just pretty much at that same level, yeah.
But that's to be expected if you're going to try something new and you're not necessarily worrying about teaching to the assessment. So I think... I think that's really cool and a really unique approach.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that I think I want to challenge other people to maybe try to look at the level that they offer something like Sport Ed to, and really try to unpack some of the way we do things and try to make it a little bit more authentic and meaningful. Yeah. Because if we can make things more authentic and meaningful, then those are the things that. Our kids are going to remember when they leave school.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, what happened was it became self-driven. So, you know, they were getting there early on time because they wanted to get out there and do it. They were, where's the gear? Here it are. Yep. So they did all that themselves. They went and got the field set up and that kind of stuff. So, I'm just quite impressed with just their level of engagement as a result of bringing that kind of idea in, actually.
How has your, how's your department responded? Is there any talk of... trying that in the junior school to the same level or other?
We like the idea, but again, we want to kind of like make things, I suppose, a little bit authentic for the different levels. So, you know, like for level one, you know, that to be good, but to kind of like scaffold it back a little bit within year 10 and year 9, for example. Just to bring a little bit more of understanding about sociocultural aspects and things like that and how society actually influences the way sport actually happens. So that's a work in progress.
You could do some really good work around ethnicities and some of the stereotypes around. I know it always seems to rear its head how the positions in rugby, some of the decision-making positions tend to be white players and all the performance, you know, wingers, big athletic seems to go to the Pacifica and Māori. You could delve into that around some of those cards
Absolutely.
That you pull out.
Could do,
Around, I don't know, salaries and stuff like that, who earns the most money.
Mm.
Maybe there's some research floating around about the difference in salary. I don't know if this is public knowledge. In New Zealand with sporting salaries, like it is in America, but the difference between white athletes and Polynesian and Māori athletes and what the pay scales are like and stuff like that. You know, you could go as far as that and, I don't know, penalise teams for something around them.
Ethnic imbalance or something.
Yep.
The really interesting thing was, like, when we came, so we did the first round and they saw their places and stuff like that and... where they came first, second, third or fourth, when they came into the transfer window, they had sussed out the good players. And of course, you know, there's a bit of a mad scramble for the good players. And yes, there were a few shifts around, but there were also some of those good players going into different teams wouldn't say upset the apple cart, but just kind of like the dynamics of the teams changed. And yeah, there was some upset, so one of the teams that should have gone through into the finals missed out. So you know, it's really good for them to actually see that, you know, they think, well, money's going to buy all the top players, but at the end of the day, well, it didn't perform.
There's so, some good links to American sport as well, but we don't see it in New Zealand to the level in America. But how you know, I think in New Zealand our athletes have more of a, their link to the team is much stronger than say an NBA player who at any second could be gone to another team. And when, like you said, when they go to that other team, they completely disrupt the chemistry. And they might be the best, one of the top five players in the NBA, and now they're paired with another top five player, and who's, you know, whose team is this, and all of those issues that that brings about. Just I think that's really cool. So you've done a bit of work with scholarship. You got a scholarship group this year. How did they get by?
Yeah, so we got we had 7 up for grabs this time.
They all submitted.
Yes, they all submitted. It's been an interesting transition into the report style of assessment. Personally, I like it from the perspective that you can get them into a much deeper level of critical thinking, because they go into the scholarship knowing what they want to look at, and so their time to be able to research and actually bring a quality assignment together, it just gives them, and they're focused on that. So, you know, it's just the whole idea of you make a statement, what do you mean by that, and what's your justification behind why you, what you're saying. Have been things that we've really, really worked at alongside a little bit of English training. So we had our curriculum leader for English come in. He's been looking into a program as far as essay writing is in particular, that really focuses on, it's not how much you write, it's the quality of what you do that, that counts. So as far as the structure is concerned, different styles of how you put your paragraphs together, the impact that they need, short, long sentences, what your, for example, just even your introduction is, and then again at the end, just wrapping it all up. So it's kind of like we really worked at trying to get them to take the reader along a pathway to actually see, well, okay, there is this and there is that, and just to get them as they're taking us through to, you know, just to branch off a little bit more and go into depth about some of the different issues that were actually coming up.
How did your scholarship group work? Did you have lunchtime meetings at
school? We pretty much focused on term two. We would get together, and most of them were free, and we would run from a tutorial from 7:30 in the morning for an hour. And we would get together and we would just go.
Give them breakfast?
Sometimes. The ones that were there on time.
Making the commitment to turn up in the morning is.
And they appreciated it, you know, and you could see just the way that they responded and the feedback given. It was interesting just trying to work on the feedback. One of the things I suppose I've struggled a little bit with was, well, okay, it's their authentic work, but how much kind of feedback can we give, and what, how well can they use overseas research and that kind of thing. It's certainly got better, and I know for you, Carl, some of the stuff that you've given me as far as advice has been really good. Put that into place, and here's hoping. I think one of the good things that I found this year was there was actually an exemplar of with the top student, so that gave the students themselves a really good handle on what to be
aiming
for.
It was always going to be hard that first year, and that transition from the exam to the report. But I think this year there's going to be the quality, I hope, will be a little bit better. I'm a little bit, we struggled with some of our students. We've had a really, our level 3 class this year had 27 students. And I found with that, where our achievement hasn't been that great, the time spent with some of my lower performing students, that's a better way. I was describing the students before was crap. That's not what I meant. The lower performing students.
Yeah.
The amount of time I've had to spend with them has kind of taken away from my top end, which is just really sad.
Yeah.
For them, we got two submissions,
right.
Which is we hoped for about six or seven, like yourself. But even for them, the students, they had a bit better idea of what was required this year, simply because of those exemplars and people getting their head around it.
And the good thing that I really, really liked, you know, invariably, because I mean, I said, look, you guys have got you've got a big choice here, you've got a massive choice. You've got all the standards that you've done this year that you can choose and go for. They all chose the issues, trends and events.
Mm-hmm.
A great variety. In fact, I think there was only two that were the same in those seven that were. Yeah, so it's really cool. So I really encourage them to think deeply about that kind of stuff. What really grabs you, and take that and just really explore and critique. And while there was quite a bit more work for them to do in presenting that as a scholarship level, I know for all of them, although it was a bit of stress for them, they've actually come away feeling really happy. And it's kind of like, if I get one, that's fantastic. But it's actually taught me a skill set that I hadn't actually realised. And invariably, those standards that we've done, even at level one and two, our students have come away thinking, well, that's a really cool concept. They actually have thought about the impact that sport is actually having, or the way that society is constructing the way sport now is played. Yeah, so it's really, you know, it's really opening them up to that kind of stuff. It's not just about getting out there and playing ball. And
That's the biggest transition from exam to report for me, is that in the exam we're spending all this time preparing them to be critical thinkers around a topic that could be anything, really. We know the overriding theme, but they've got to then take an issue and think critical about it. But now in the report, we can just teach them critical thinking process throughout the year, and they learn to apply that process to everything they do, not just prepare for this one event. And then I imagine a lot of them, when we had this exam approach, would they do the exam, and then that whole critical thinking process is out the door now for some of them. Not everyone, but now, because we're teaching them those skills and they're applying that from day one all the way across the year, they're going to have those skills for life and being able to think critically.
And that's what you're wanting, eh? There's a method behind why you're doing what you're doing. You know, you're wanting them to actually take that skill set away wherever they go.
We don't want students to just settle for what they hear or what they read, but to really unpick it and go, well, this is what I think, and here's what we need to have a bit of future focus on. So we've got how many weeks left? 3 weeks?
Something like that.
Holidays? What do you got planned for the holidays? And what's your focus for 2017?
Yeah, right. As far as holidays are concerned, there'll be a bit of just kind of like tidying up the schoolwork.
No, you're not going to do schoolwork in the holidays, eh?
Oh, I never thought of that. we do our annual shift, like when we're in Invercargill. My brother and sister-in-law would go to Kaiteri from Christchurch, and when they went the first time, they said, oh, you've got to come next time. So we dragged all our camping gear from Invercargill to Christchurch for Christmas, and then Christchurch to Kaiteri. So, and the first time, I can still remember the kids, the four of them, just coming around that corner and seeing the beach. They just blew their socks off, eh?
Kaiteri's beautiful.
And when we came back, all they could say is, this is where we're coming next Christmas. This is where we're coming. This is what we're doing. So, 15 years later, even though the kids aren't there, we still go. So that's the plan. We'll go there early January for about 3 weeks and just really chill. I used to take my mountain bike up and do a few of the tracks there, but I actually quite enjoy just getting out there and running them now. So,
still run them.
Oh, trying to.
Good on you.
As far as 2017 is concerned, I think a lot of stuff that I'm looking at planning on doing is a result of coming to this workshop, eh? I think one of the big takeaways for me is I've always wanted to get into the kind of like integration of how PE is done within the school, and how it can link into the other curriculum areas. So Rob and I will go back, because Rob came up with us, and we'll go back and just chat away with our
PE staff about it, and I'm quite keen to start it at a low level, because I think if you go whiz-bang, it can really fall to pieces quite quickly.
Yep.
But being quite deliberate about maybe just getting alongside one curriculum area, which I've already got an idea of, and just chatting and saying, hey, look, what do you think of this idea? This is what we're thinking. How could it link with you guys? Or, yeah, just trying to get that whole concept of, at the end of the day, key competencies are fairly critical, and how can we link that into the curriculum and, yeah, produce a program that the pupils themselves can actually see linkage across from just PE and how it can relate into all the other areas.
I like that, starting small too, so yep. Not trying to link up math, science, English,
yep.
And social studies, but going, well, okay, maybe here's one or two learning areas.
Well, I'm even thinking if there's not much of a take on it, to maybe go to, for example, the English area and say, look, I want to do a unit within PE that has an English focus on it. So rather than them doing it within English, we could actually just get them to do something within PE itself that goes across different other curriculum areas. So we'll just see how they respond to it.
Well, I think you find that our learning area, we innovate a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think we do it really well. I think we do it better than most other departments to an extent. So I hope that pans out for you, and I think I hope you get some learning areas who are keen to put as much in as you might be prepared to put in, and you can come up with some really good good end product there for your students, which will be cool. So good luck with that.
Thanks.
Look, I really want to appreciate you for coming in and having a chat around some of that stuff for 1.4. I think that sport ed model is really cool, but taking it that next step and linking in the socio-critical stuff around sponsorship and media and all of those things really makes it a bit more authentic for the kids. Authentic in a unit that's already made so much more authentic because of that sporty approach. So keep that up, and also the scholarship. I look forward to hearing how your students get on in terms of results early Jan, late Feb.
Yeah.
And hopefully you pick up a few scholarships.
And I liked your idea too, actually, about that, of actually getting the English curriculum to be able to critique some of the work, the assignment work. So that's something that I'll certainly look at, because I know our curriculum leader there is Head Beebs. In fact, he came in and took a session on one of those mornings.
Yeah.
So he's absolutely passionate about it. So, you know, I see it as no big issue. I mean, he loves the fact that we're actually trying to link all this kind of stuff into our area anyway. So, you know, I know he'll be on board to even do a bit of critiquing.
Cool.
Yeah, so that's cool.
All right, hopefully the wind doesn't get you too much on the flight out.
I'm looking forward to it. We need it.
All right, cheers, Andrew.
Cheers, mate. Thank you.